Okay, so who we're here for tonight? From Los Alamos, Jerry.
All right. Welcome. My name is Jerry from Los Alamos, California. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I see a lot of people in here I've known since I came in. They're here longer than me. I see people came in after me. I see Mike over there. Far out. I came in when I was 61. I don't know how old you are, but it works when you work it, you know? It works. So here, a little bit about me, what it was like. I was born in 1949 in Bronx, New York. My father was a soldier in the war, World War II, came back, married my mother. Her father was the biggest bookmaker and gangster in New York at the time. So that was my grandfather. I learned all these good morals from my father, and I learned amazing, crazy shit from my grandfather. I don't want to go through a long drunkalogue because that's usually how my shares go, because I have to have these things in my head that you have to hear, bullshit. You know, last night, I was thinking about coming here today, and I thought, what am I going to talk about? Okay, well, I'll tell them what it was like. And seriously, from 3 a.m. till about the sun was coming up, I had this three-hour drunkalogue going. And I thought, wow, this is almost like another fourth step or something. It was pretty crazy. It was crazy. So here, I'm going to go quick with this. So I was born in New York. Our families lived together. We moved from the Bronx to Yonkers after some bad guys came to get me and my cousin in our public school, and they caught him, but I got away. Enemies of my grandfather, I guess. He used to drive around a bulletproof Cadillac. We had a shooting range under our house. We shot a lot of silenced 45s. We threw a lot of silenced 45s in the Bronx River. I grew up like coming home from someplace with my grandfather. I was young. He got pulled over by a cop. He got in a car. He punched the cop in the face, picked the cop up, threw him on the hood of his car, took his card out and flicked it to him and said, "Hey, Johnny, go tell you," called everybody Johnny, "go tell your sergeant who you just pulled over, asshole." Got in his car and drove away. So I grew up with a real, not a dislike, just not much respect for police. When I was younger and I got my license, I had this little badge from the chief of police of our town. And if I got pulled over and I opened to show my license, they would see that and they were like, "Oh, okay, you need any help with anything?" It was incredible. So I was able to skate on lots of things. I did a lot of shit, you know, they talk about emotionally and mentally. Now, I don't know if I fit in that category because I'm sure none of us do. But, yeah, right? But when I was probably four, my grandmother, who was amazing, she left Nazi Europe before they killed her whole family. I'm Jewish. And she told her parents when she was 13, "We got to get out of here." They said, "Oh, it's going to be okay." She came to the United States by herself when she was 13. Didn't know the language, didn't know anything. And that's why I was here. They killed the rest of them that stayed back there. So my father, when the war came, he went over there. He was a clarinet player. He could have stayed out. He played with Benny Goodman and all these cool guys. But he wanted to go, and he went behind the enemy lines and won medals for calling in artillery strikes and all this shit. My mild father, who, like, the rest of his life, he made a prayer with God, "Get me out of this alive," when people were just dropping next to him, "and I'll never make waves for anybody." That's what he used to call being a pain in the ass, I guess, making waves. And he was like that. He was a mellow guy, and he was a boxer. And he quit after a while. My mom didn't like putting up with that. So then he got into sales, and he was a great guy. Everybody loved him, and that's great. My grandfather, on the other hand, was a maniac. He'd pick us up from school. We would drive through Harlem. He'd show me these dirty chickens hanging in the window. "If you don't go to school, you're going to wind up eating these." And then we'd drive through the kosher Jewish section, and it was exactly the same thing. Dirty chickens hanging in the windows. And it really turned me off to the whole religion and shit. I got into Hebrew school at 12, like you did back there. A rabbi slapped me. I threw him over a desk. I got thrown out of Hebrew school, and I had to have private tutoring to get bar mitzvahed, which I did. So I became a man at 13. And I had a resentment against religion, basically, after that. And other things, a rabbi caught me stealing once, and stealing some candy when I was young, and put his hand on mine. I turned around as a rabbi. I was like, oh. So So I just left the candy and I left. And I decided he'd put a curse on me. And when I came home from college years later, I saw that guy and had a big beard by then. I didn't have a beard when I was 13. I had a little beard, I had a shave, but not like this. And I saw that guy and I actually pulled a blank gun out and shot at him to freak him out. So talk about keeping resentment for a crazy amount of years. Really incredible. So, you know, I was thinking about this 3-hour drunkalogue last night, and I said something to this Louis over there. I don't even want to talk about what I did because it's fucking embarrassing. It's really embarrassing, the shit I did. I mean, on every level, to my family, when I should have been there, I wasn't there. I like getting loaded. So I liked alcohol, I liked Outside Issues. I loved Outside Issues, you guys. I made a lot of money with Outside Issues. I traveled a lot. I did. And I liked adrenaline. Adrenaline is like my drug of choice, I think. I liked fighting. I had this gift. Like, you know, when you get hit by a car, I got hit by a car when I was 13. Coming home from a basketball game, 13, drank a bunch of booze, and I always had crazy ideas, but the booze would make me think, that's a really good idea. So I was pretty drunk. We were going up this big hill in a snowstorm in New York. I got this big snowball together, and my friend was across the street, my best friend, that, you know, best friends, you kill each other all the time. So I'm charging across the road with this big snowball, and this car is trying to make it up the hill at about 40 miles an hour and plows into me, a 58 Chevy. And I went through the grill, the radiator, the fan broke off, the hood crumpled up, went through the windshield. Made a loud noise, and I flew about 40 feet, and I couldn't move. I was like kind of paralyzed. I was trying to get up and kill that mother. I couldn't move. It was like, and the police, my parents, my mother, and my father. So I was in the hospital for a long time, and was told me I'd never walk again. But bullshit, I'm gonna walk. And I walked, and I wound up playing football actually later for high school, college, a little semi-pro. And but I drank a lot, and it was hard for me to keep things going. So I got out of high school. I went into, got busted in 10th grade for marijuana with a guy that grew up and became the famous leader of a back east band that everybody thinks is from Boston, but they're really from Yonkers. And I'm not going to say the name because you're not supposed to. I also grew up with that group that had makeup all over their face. And I knew those guys pretty well. We used to go to clubs in New York and fights, lots of fights. Oh my God, did we have fights. And I was like taller then before I shrank down. Seriously, I was taller and I was more, yeah. So I liked fighting and things would like slow down. And it was like, I could fight two people and I loved it. And then I got into knife fighting. When I was young, we went to a movie and this big guy cut in front of this little kid in front of me. This little kid pulled out a knife and just stabbed him a few times in the side and fell down. I thought, oh, that's terrific. So I learned how to fight with knives. I take courses in it and all that. And I liked it. I was never in the service. I did tell them I got drafted, and we had a big blah, blah, blah. And I told them, look, if the bad guys come here, I'll put on a green hat. I got guns. I'll shoot at them with you. It's all good. And I told them some other stuff that I'm not going to go into, but they basically said, yeah, you're freaking nuts, and okay, you don't have to come. And that's good. My dad even said, nah, Vietnam, bullshit. And I agreed, so okay. We go up, I go to college, I go to this 2-year school. I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to make money, so I went and worked for a Chevrolet factory on the Hudson River. Bless you. And I drank a lot through this whole time. I drank, but I was kind of good at it, so I could keep... So I worked from, I think, 4 in the afternoon to 1 in the morning building Chevrolets. And it was like, you know, 95% black guys on this Hudson River factory, and they all had a knife in one pocket and a bottle in the other. And a couple of white guys that were like managers. And me, I got hired because I passed this crazy physical. Well, I was there the night Martin Luther King got shot. And they quietly snuck all the white guys out of there and said, well, you can't work here anymore because by tomorrow they'll kill you if they see you. So that was the end of that job. So I went to college. I went to a 2-year school. I wanted to decide to be an architect. I wanted to learn engineering first so I could build what I designed. So I went to this technical civil engineering deal, and the first day, the dean of the engineering school, he points to me, he goes, oh, I want to talk to you after the meeting. All right. So what? He goes, see how you're different than everybody else? What are you talking about? He goes, you have a beard. I said, well, shit, you have eyebrows. And like, he said, you have to shave your beard off. I said, I don't have to shave my beard off. That's absurd. The last day I shaved was for high school graduation. I had a beard before that, but I played on the football teams until I would get thrown off inevitably before the old end of the season. But before I'd get thrown off, I played, so they let me have a beard and put up my shit. But for graduation, they said you can't have a beard. So I won't go to graduation. My mom said, yeah, you are. So I shaved. That was the last day. That was June 1967. Yeah. And I never got it. I'd see my father wake up and put this razor on his throat before he's even awake. I thought, this is absurd. But anyway, all right. So I didn't shave. He goes, well, I can't make you shave, but I can make it so it's not easier for you. I said, all right, fine, you do that. Well, I graduated with like the highest average out of all those clean-shaven fellers. Yeah, I tied with a guy that was a vet, John Nowak. Yeah, he was a vet. He was like my arch enemy or something. But so then I went from there. I went to... Every summer during this stuff, I worked for civil engineers, and I was a blasting guy, which helped keep me out of the Army later, because I told them I could explode, blow things up, and you probably shouldn't put me in. But and they believed it. And I did incredible blast. I was supposed to go to Woodstock, and that week, we loaded 22,000 pounds of dynamite in all these holes with 10 millisecond delay fuses, and I got to like fire this thing off, and I was smoking opium in those days. So I would like take these giant hits of opium, hit this thing, and boom, 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 boom. It was amazing. And I always put in, you know, I'd do the math, and I'd figure out how much dynamite we need. Like on that, we needed about 20,000 pounds, and I threw in extra ton, basically, just to make it exciting. And we'd get calls from a supermarket 2 miles away. It's like 80-pound rock just came through our roof. Like, did anybody? No. All right, cool. We'll pay for it. We'll fix it. It's all good. So that was good. That was lucky. So for the whole thing, all right, so I met guys during that when I was in this construction. I met crazy Vietnam veterans. And we all got together because they were like me. They were like lowlifes, you know, but we all worked at this. And we planned robbery, and we planned a big robbery in a big racetrack in back east, a horse track. And you know, I had the floor plans, and I'm working all this stuff out. Well, it came to where we were going to have to bodily, well, maybe kill somebody, and I didn't want to do that over money. So at the end, I pulled out. I said, I'm not doing this. I am not doing this. They went, they did it. Ultimately, they shot 2 people, didn't kill them. They got caught. For some reason, they thought I narked on him or something. So I either had to kill 3 people or leave New York. So I married this old girlfriend. We got the escape from New York thing. Her mother had bought her a new car when we broke up. She was so happy. She bought her daughter a new car. We got married. We got some money. We jumped in her car. We split town. We went back and forth delivering outside issues from California to Florida and back and forth. Made films. We had a really good time. She divorced me in Albuquerque because her family was really afraid of me, evidently, and they talked her into it. I got crazy. I went to a bar in Albuquerque. I didn't go to a bar. I walked by it. I just drank at home. I drank by myself. I didn't like any other people ever. And these cowboys came walking out of a bar, and I looked at them, and I was like, oh, y'all fucking who? It's like 11 in the morning, you know? This guy punched me right in the face. I fell on the hood of a car, and I was seeing, you know, the Disney birds and stuff. And then I thought, wow, this guy thinks I'm out, and he's coming over, he's all gawking. So I just put my hand through his head, you know. And then these other 2 jumped me. Now, I always carried a buck. Now I have a lot better knives. But I carried a buck then. And I thought, nah. So I crawled under this van. And so the next day I went back, and I'm like all beat up. And my wife comes home. She worked in this bank, and they all were afraid of me, too. And she was starting to hang out with them and not me. And I'm walking down the street, I'm all beat up, and I had done this work for some shrinks, you know, professional, and they had their office, and they wore their own, they made special clothes, and a man and wife, and they saw me walking down the street. I did some architecture design for them. Jerry, where are you going? They see me all beat up. I said, going to the gun shop, gonna get a rifle, I'm gonna go kill those assholes that beat me up yesterday. They said, that's a great idea. Come on, get in, we'll give you a ride. So I got in the car, and they took me to their house. They lived on this ranch way out of town. They kept me from Thursday to Sunday at their house. And by the time I left, it was like I understood lots of stuff. Like, I'm unhappy because I'm trying to do things for other people, whether it's my parents or school or my... I'm trying to please other people before I'm dealing with myself in a way. And I would like get trapped, and I'd have this like triangle thing that come around me, and quicksand's filling me up, and then I'd smack out and beat whatever in front of me. And I did that lots of times. And so I was kind of better after that for a few minutes. So I left Albuquerque when I got these divorce papers. Well, I didn't get any. She just told me. So I left, got on a train, drove, came on Amtrak with my dog and my bicycle. I met a girl on the train that was leaving her husband, this cowgirl. And we went in between the cars and smoked some outside issues. And then my dog was with me, and he was in the mail car in a cage. And we're going to summer. I'm going through, you know, from Albuquerque out to California. And the mail guy says, you can come back here on long stops and give your dog water and take him out to piss and this and that, blah, 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 because it wasn't like an express train. We made some stops. All right. Well, they changed guys in Barstow, and I go back there, and I knock on the mail car, and this guy opens the door a little bit, and he goes, what? And I don't recognize him. I go, my dog's in there. I'm going to give him some water. And he goes, oh, you can't come in here. It's a federal... I say, oh, come on. I've been doing this. I said, I just want to give my dog. I'm not here to steal the mail. So I smash the door open. I pull up my buck. So he runs out of there, and I give my dog water. And he comes back with all these guys. They must have guys. They have guys with clubs. They have the clubs. And I thought, all right, getting off. So they threw me, my dog, and my shit off. This girl starts screaming, what are you doing with my boyfriend? I just met her. They throw her ass, too. Susie Zaney. They throw her off, too. And she starts talking to the management. Pretty soon they get us, she explains, I don't know what she said, but they get us a hotel room for the night in Barstow. And then they rent a car for us to drive to Santa Barbara. So that was all good. It worked out good. So I get to Santa Barbara. I'm living with these people that I knew from New York. I go from like, a, I don't know, 185 pounds to 240. I'm eating these 3-square meals. I'm drinking like a fish. I'm doing all these drugs. I'm in Isla Vista. You know, you meet somebody, you're sleeping with them that night. It was like, wow, this is all right. And this was before AIDS, you guys. So, you know, occasionally we'd have to go to the clinic, but it was minor shit. And, yeah. So, did a lot of drugs, and we did a lot. There was always, I drank beer, I drank some Michelob, and when I was a kid, we would go around and see guys that were mowing their lawns when I was a real young kid. And we'd look in their garages in other neighborhoods, and they'd have beer cases. So we'd go back and I'd steal their beer and party with it, you know. We didn't steal from our old neighborhood. We were like Robin Hood, I guess. And I go to a 2-year college at the University of Miami, and I go out for the football team. And back in the 70s, they were hiring. They were actually hiring them, it turned out. But they were recruiting people from inner cities in Miami, really good football players. And they became a dynasty later on. Chuck Foreman, Ted Hendricks, you know, those guys I played with until I got thrown off that team. And it was a whole different time, you know. It was really different. Drugs were nothing. Drunk driving was a slap on the wrist. The wars were going on. I got thrown out of Miami because during the Kent State days, they took over the administration building and the engineering building at Miami, and I wanted to get in there and do work. I loved what I did at school. So I'm like breaking away through crowds to get into the building, and they had like little guys in the crowds taking pictures, and mine shows up being a maniac pushing people through because I wanted to get in. So I get thrown out of school, but then it all came up what happened, and I got back in. While I was in school, we wrote a book called Change Over Time that became Miami was a really conventional, conservative, southern design architecture. And we went in there, and my design teacher was a maniac. He was Disney's actual personal architect, not for Disneyland stuff, but for his stuff, his houses and things. So he was my design teacher, and he taught me a lot, and we wrote this book, and it was very radical, and the administration went crazy after it was printed, and they fired everybody, and it sucked. Yeah, crazy stuff. All right, so that's, yeah, and college was good. I had two roommates die during college, playing with outside issues, one with LSD and one lots of downs. And we're trying to keep this guy going. Come on, we gotta keep him walking. You know, I think he's dead. And, you know, we were young, we were college guys. But, and it was always like, in Miami, we drank, they drank. I drank my beer and I did a lot of pills then. Quaaludes were starting to happen. And Quaaludes, and then you pop a little alcohol with them, and then, oh, they're even better. And so, disgusting. I never got to go to family things when I was home. I had fights with, I'd get drunk at any wedding, funeral. I got a call years later when I was sober. Not a call, a texty thing. Are you the guy, are you Jerry, my cousin, that knocked out my father at a funeral? I had it right back. I am, Celia, how are you? Wow, been a long time. And, you know, I loved my grandmother, and he said something like, better her than me. I just turned around and planted him, and everybody just backed away. Oh. Except my mother, she was like, oh, Jerry. She used to say, you know, you do these things, they're just sicker than you are. Like, and it turns out it's true, you know? So anyway, I went through all this. I went through the divorce in Albuquerque, came out here, I met a woman, worked in the Isla Vista Park District, built all these great parks. We'll go up in the mountains and start these giant landslides and gather up, bless you. Yeah, that's right. Want some water? And, okay, and gather up all these rocks from the landslides we started, and we built all these amazing things in Isla Vista with them. It was incredible. We tore up a street and built a park, for Christ's sakes. Cops used to drive around on bicycles. They'd be like, yeah, it was great. Yeah, my thing with cops is still not good. But I'm working on it, you know, I'm improving. Isla Vista. So I married this woman I met. First time I met her, I went through this house. She was in the bathroom naked. And it was like, wow, we wound up being together that night because it was Isla Vista. And we got married a few years later because we didn't get married until after we had kids. She got pregnant, and then we got married. I didn't want kids. I said, the world's nuts, and I'm probably nutser. But she said, well, I must have kids. So, all right. So we had two kids, and I'm happy to say they're doing really well. They're in their 30s. They don't really talk to me much. My son does a little bit. My daughter, not so much really at all. It's been 12 years. And that was what led me up to here, basically. I could not handle my kids not talking to me. I didn't, my ex-wife, I got it. You know, she was with me 31 years. I came to a note, and she took a bunch of shit and split. And I was drunk. She had big lawyers, her father's this big dude, and, money-wise. So she had lawyers, and I lost a really nice house in San Ynez. I didn't lose it. I gave it away. House in San Ynez, my money in the bank, all my work, my jobs. Had no place to live. I was living in a dynamite shack out on a ledge on a job they were doing out there in Santa Barbara County, in North County. Then I found a place to live. So a friend had me at his house. Then I moved to Los Alamos, and I still had some money, and I thought, well, I'm an architect. I'll get a job, but nobody would hire me. You know, I lived on 600 acres here in Los Alamos at this ranch and had this giant house to myself, like 3,500 square feet, me and my two dogs, my two cats. My drafting room was all skylights and glass walls, and it was freaking, and I had no work. It was like crazy, and I was whipping through my money. It was expensive. So I basically, well, I got thrown out. She was afraid of me, this woman. I'd go out, I'd be drunk all the time, and I'd scream at night, ah, because there was all this land. I'd go out, walk like 10 feet, think I was away from her house enough, you know. And like, so she would like sometimes sleep in her car all night, locked, because she was afraid I'd come get her. Or she'd go into the town of Los Alamos and sleep in some friends' houses. And I'd tell her, come on, you're my favorite Republican. I would never hurt you. And I did. I would never hurt her. Or anybody. I'd never touched a woman in my life. Once. Well, my wife Diane slapped me. I pushed her too hard, and her brother-in-law came down to kick my ass, and they carried him out, you know. So we broke up. We were just going out there, and I wound up marrying her. She was the Escape from New York lady, as a matter of fact. And yeah, we're still in touch, me and her. We Facebook and text. Well, we Facebook a little bit. And her older sister and I, we're still in touch. It's cool. My second wife, not so much, the one with 31 years, the one with my kids. I'm glad we're done. It's okay. They used to work right in Los Alamos. My son had a wine tasting room, and she worked for him. I'd be driving by, hey, fuck. You know? Like, nice car you bought with my money. Arr. But I accept all that now. So I didn't accept the thing with my kids. That was my biggest thing. I didn't have a religion. I didn't have a God. I thought God sucked. My dad, who was an amazing guy, died paralyzed after his doctor screwed up on a test and he never walked again. Indian doctors that he went to, and I had this resentment for Indian. I flew down there to Florida after it happened 2 days later, and that clinic was gone. Those guys knew they screwed up and they disappeared. I went down there and got some boys together to go hang those fuckers, and they weren't there. Oh well. So my dad was in a wheelchair the rest of his life. Incredible. Incredible. Both my parents died 20 and 25 years ago. They never saw me sober or sane, which is sad. I got totally loaded at their funerals. I showed up once on a plane and had no shorts and a t-shirt, and my brother and sister picked me up and got me clothes, and I was just pathetic. Okay, so come out here. I'm living out here. I'm in this little house. Los Alamos, I have a roommate. I'm starting to get little jobs. I'm still drinking, but I'm getting little jobs through people who are helping me out, doing some outside issues, making some money. And I get drunk one day, a couple drinks. Okay, I'm almost done with the old story. Almost a couple drinks, and these cops come, and I'm pissed about my kids, and one thing leads to another, and back up, you're in my space, I say, and they go, sit down, and I go, no, and I throw an elbow at his solar plexus, thinking this is a great idea, because I'll just knock him down, and the other cop will watch, and I'll get to go home. Okay, so I throw it, and I think, bulletproof vest, so yeah, so I kick him in the nuts real hard, whoa, so he goes down, and I get really scared, as my foot was coming up, this is so true, I said, you are so deep in this now. I really remember saying that. It was like lit up when I said it almost. So I got really scared. So I punched the other guy in the throat. He pulled back. I broke this fence behind him. The guy on the bottom at that point, his tasers, one hit me in the throat, one hit me here. And this guy's tasers came in. First ones pissed me off. I felt like a cat was going like this to me. But boy, when those second ones overlapped, it was like, and so I surrendered. That might have been my first surrender of my life, actually. I fell on the ground, flopping around and shit. And they put all these sets of handcuffs on me, my legs, my feet, two of my arms. And they had me laying there with these wires coming out. The paramedics came to cut the wires. And I saw an Indian doctor, and I thought of my dad. So he comes to bend over to cut the wires that are sticking out of me. I kicked him so hard in the chest, he's like, wah! They start whacking me again with their sticks. I lost ultimately 8 teeth that night. Now I got, look at these teeth. Got teeth. I don't talk as well with them, but yeah. So, all right, so then assault on police, assault on paramedics. Who's assault on paramedics? Who the hell does that? And so I'm going to prison. Yeah, you're going to prison for 10 years. I'm like, I'm 61. Well, maybe 8 and a half. And I'm thinking, I won't live through prison. This is terrible. And I have no money, so I get a public defender. And she goes, well, maybe if you go to AA, it'll help lessen your sentence. And I'm like, I'm not going to that Christian cult. And I come in here, and I see God is, we understood him, and I thought that was good. And then here's the deal. I went to Solvang, and I saw a guy there that used to be in the the junk metal business, whatever you call it, scrap metal. And he was a tough guy. He was a former Special Forces fellow. And, you know, props to that. And he was a maniac. And all of a sudden, he's at this meeting, Robert M. And he's at this meeting, and he's talking about this higher power and being a nice guy and helping others. And I'm like thinking, you know, this guy, he's an asshole, but so am I. And I'm not going to say things that I don't believe, and I don't think he is either. This guy really believes this. So that made me like a little willing to like, wow, this guy, wow. So I started being a little willing. And I'll tell you, at 4 months, I was driving to the meeting in Solvang, and it was a sunny April day. April. And I thought, wow, I got a third of a year of not drinking. And I'm going to go to this meeting. And all of a sudden, I see the cop, the one I tried to punch in the throat, not the one I kicked. He retired, actually, because this old guy got him. He retired. And I see him. He walks into the bar. And I get this great idea. I've been sober for a third of a year. I'm going to go in there, get a double shot of Jameson's Irish whiskey. I'm gonna bring in my K-bar, I'm gonna cut his face off, hang it on my my mirror. I'm picturing all this. And then go on a drive to the meeting and go, I'm a newcomer, I had a drink. Not even thinking about that other part. So I get out of my car, and I had a hat, and I put it down, I reach into the seat to grab this knife, and it starts hailing on me. This is true, you guys. People were taking pictures of the hail that day. It starts hailing, just in this little area of town. It starts hailing on me, and it's like freaking burning me. And you know, since I got hit by that car, I don't feel pain. I could throw my hand in boiling water and pick up coals and bullshit. It's weird. I get cut. People go, you're bleeding. I'm like, whoa, where? And I just don't feel it. And, right? Yeah. And wake up, blood in the bed. It's like, oh, I scratched myself. Oh. But whatever. So it started hailing on me. And it was like, wow, there is this God that this. People are talking about something that watches over me. I just get in the car, and I'm almost crying at this point. I'm like, this is crazy. And I go to the meeting, I tell them, but then I am sort of crying. And to me, that was like this spiritual, like, come on, asshole, wake up. I mean, you know, I heard you got hit by the car, you were supposed to be paralyzed, you weren't. You got knocked out in that pool, you went to the bottom, you came out with a dislocated neck, you were supposed to be brain dead. Well, maybe you are a little, but all these things, point blank in my face went click, and I got to pop my car in reverse and out of there. So God was always with me, and I was like pissing in his face. And when one day he said to, I don't know, Thor or whoever throws the lightning shit, get that guy. And it was the first time that I was defeated. I thought, yep, time's up. So I'm in the AA. I had a sponsor that came up to me and said, this guy had his head was this big. Had the biggest head in the world. Not you, the guy before you. The biggest head in the world. I couldn't even hear what he said because I was looking at his big head. Plus, he came up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor temporary until you get one. I was like, yeah, all right, cool. So we're doing the steps. And the fourth step I did with him, and I couldn't do my fifth with him because I didn't trust him. Or I don't know. He would have been on my next fourth step or something. I don't know. I couldn't do it. So I got this guy that lived in my neighborhood. He's right there, Peter, who had like lots of years. You know, normally we don't mix people like that. I mean, I was like this hippie, basically not going to the war, and he was assembling atomic weapons. And yet, he saved my life, that guy, right there. He let me come to his house whenever I wanted. It was always open. He taught me a lot of good stuff. So, that's him. People like, there's people in this room when I first came in, Erica, and people in this room, Billy, Louie, all you guys that were here when I got here, Mr. Bill, you know, I hang out with these three people right here a lot at our meetings in Los Alamos. There's 100 years of sobriety right here, these three people. It's freaking incredible. I have a new sponsor now, and he has a sponsor, and he has a sponsor, and he has a sponsor. I've got like five layers. The oldest one has 47 years. It's like an old vampire cult or something. But yeah, I mean, these guys are... So I came in here, I got this freaking book. And to me, you know, it's the college I remember that shit. And I got this book, and it said... I'm going to do this quick. I started reading this book. You know, I like reading. I read a lot of books. The tremendous fact. This is the freaking... No, not even there yet. Let's go to the introduction. The first... Forward to the first edition. says, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, it's in Italian, is the main purpose of this book. Whoa. Okay, that's kind of straightforward. And then you like flip over and you're reading this great shit. Oh, this is wonderful. And then something that stuck out to me next was, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that, this is page 17, we have each discovered a common solution. So like we're all different in here. I mean, we're all different, but we're all the same in our afflictions and similar in lots of ways, and we have to look for the similarities. I mean, I'm sure you all did things that I didn't do. I would like to lay on the runway where when the 747s came out and see where they landed at Miami International Airport, and I'd have some I called them handlers that would come with me, and I'd eat some a lot of acid, and I'd see where the skid marks were where they landed, and I'd go a little before so they'd land over me. And these big planes, and there was no security back then, you know, and these planes would come, and you could scream, you wouldn't even hear your voice, and I could see the pilot's face, and then these guys would, like, you know, scrape me off the runway. So, all right, so maybe you all haven't done that, but we've all done things that are absurd. You know, we really have. I mean, I threw a guy out of a second-story window. I didn't even open it first. So, I don't know. Says here, the great fact for us is this. We have to have and had deep, effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. Now, I used to like to look at the stars, and I thought, you know, I'm eating acid or mushrooms or whatever, and I'm with my higher power. But, and I might have been, but it wasn't the same as the spirituality I get here. That did nothing to change my life other than I was more spaced than the day before. But, no, seriously, but, and it made me, you know, we'd sit around and we'd all be loaded and we'd be telling stuff. But I say it all the time. It's like, you guys are my tribe. And it's almost like when we would sit around and eat mushrooms and we'd be telling stuff. And it was like, we were honest. This is how I feel. And it's just like that in AA. It's just like that. You know, we drop the bullshit and we come in here and we tell us from the heart what we think, what we feel. And, you know, some of it, I mean, there's a bunch of psychos in here. And, you know, but we're here, we know it. We're like at the top of the crazy pyramid. We're up here in this little point because we know it. We're trying to do something about it. And we're learning how to do something about it. We're getting tools, you know, tools. And, you know, I carve wood besides design shit. And it's there. And I just have to take all the extra shit away from it. And that's what it is with me, you know. I'm a good guy in here, like I was made to be. But there's so much crap that I have to remove it. And this program gives me the tools how to do that, you know. It's kind of like, it's like the cheapest shrinking you can get. You know, it says here on page of whatever. Page don't matter, but we agnostics. This was good. We had to find a power of which we could live, and it had to be greater than ourselves. And I was like, and it said, well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourselves. Well, shit, this is like they're giving you the answers. It's very cool. All right. So, like, we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So when I get up in the morning, I get up. I don't come to. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And my dog is there. And lots of times, Barbara's around. And I'm really happy. Thank you for letting me wake up in this bed instead of some horrible place. I start with that. And then eventually I'll get to doing my morning readings. And sometimes I'm better at keeping it together. Sometimes not. When I'm not, it's obvious. And I get called on it. Like, you know, get your head out of your ass and get back to what you were doing. And I can't. They say resting on your laurels. Well, I got no laurels. I mean, shit. Got no laurels. So, you know, I'm really glad that I got in here. I met so many good people. I've had the opportunity to speak, be in service. It's a big deal. I was in a meeting last night with a guy in a wheelchair, and he said, you know, you want to be in service, start hanging out with me. I always need help. And I thought, that's pretty good. Yeah. So I'll probably be carting him to meetings in a couple of months. And that's great. Good old Bob. But the point is that, like, since I came in here, you know, I've had some stuff happen. I once had a sponsee that stopped coming. And I know when I was weird, Peter, Jeffrey, my sponsor now, they'd come, they'd find me. What's up? What's going on? So I went to find this guy, and his roommate came out and got all crazy with me. And one thing led to another. And he started, AA sucks, and Jerry, you're an old asshole. And blah, blah, blah. And he started coming toward me. And I thought, I love it. I'm going to gut this kid like a fish. And, you know, I whipped out, I put my hand to my knife. And I probably had 4 or 5 years at this point. But I'm not going to let some young kid punch me in the face for crying out loud. And he saw me make that move, and he kind of stopped. So he went inside, and then his sponsor, the kid I was sponsoring, who was the son of this woman I had this thing with, incredibly enough. And yeah, you meet some crazy people in here, like, don't matter how much time everybody has. Listen, I'm one of them, you guys are one of them. But, you know, they say you can, like, the odds are pretty good at meeting somebody in AA to hang out with. It's just the goods are pretty odd. And that's a whole nother silly, stupid story, though. So I didn't pull the knife from the guy. I got in my car. I was shaking. I was freaking shaking. I didn't know what to do. I called Peter. He wasn't available with the phone. I called Big Luke.
Yeah.
And he spoke to me for about a half hour, and I was able to drive home calm. I stopped carrying a knife for a while. I have it back now. You know, like a shirt says, you want to fight with me? Think about it. I got old for a reason. But, okay. So, what else? 5 minutes, perfect. Yeah, you know, if you just came in, the newcomers, it's good to laugh about all this. But the reality is, this shit will kill you. This shit will kill you. And I was at a meeting last night with a woman. She had 19 years and she went out. And she's one of the few that made it back after a situation like that. Normally, the longer you're in, the harder it is to come back, I hear. So I'm not going to go out again. I mean, these Santa Maria people told me, we're not going to waste our batteries on you. We'll just shoot your ass next time. But, oh, you know, here's one final thing. So I'm about 6 months, 7 months sober after not cutting this cop's face off. And I'm sitting on my front porch and I'm reading the book. And that black evil cop car comes pulling up in front of my house. And from the other side I hear, and a black and white, and they both stop. Now, in the old days, I might have run in and grabbed my python or something, and that's a .45, it's not a snake. And it's actually a .357 Magnum, be honest. And I didn't. I sat there and kept carving and reading my book. And I had a roommate at that point for a short time. She got all nervous. I'm going in the house. I don't know what's going to happen. Okay. So she goes in the house. They get out. They don't even look at me. They run across the street to that house. And then I look and I see it was one of the cops. It was the cop I punched in the throat again. So I go, wow. So I start trotting across the street. And I'm carrying my knife, my carving knife. Not thinking. The other cop in the black car, he don't know me. This other guy just sort of looking at me and he's just starting to remember who I am. So he's pulling out his weapon as I'm coming up with my knife. And this other guy goes, no, no, no. So he stops. And I walk up to him, he looks at me and I go, Bill? He goes, Jerry, we shake hands. Gives me this big hug. I go, oh my God, I'm hugging a pig. This is incredible. I say that to him. And he just kind of laughs. He goes, well, you know, I prayed for you that night. And I said, I don't know if you're full of shit or not, but you are a martial artist, right? He goes, yes. I said, well, someday we're going to get in the ring, put on that shit. I'm going to kick the shit out of you again. And, so we laughed about that. A year later, I'm driving home from my friend Richard's house in town. I don't have my seatbelt on. He's on the side of the road talking to some guy. I drive by, I roll on my window. Bill, he's on that side. I'm driving. Bill, how you doing? Oh, Jerry, how you doing? Put on your seatbelt, Jerry. I'm like, Bill, I'm going to be home in a block. Jerry, put on your seatbelt. I'm like, Bill, don't make me come out of this car. You know, so it's like a whole different relationship with that one. But that's the only one, you know? So I'm still working on that and lots of other stuff. I'm so grateful that, you know, I came in here, I had my carving knife when I first came in. And I sat there like, wah. And you and some other maniacs came over and talked to me. Oh, Joanne, she, oh, hi, honey, here's a piece of chocolate and a book. I mean, really? And, you know, you tell a story in here, I got tased and beat to death. You go tell that to the people out there, they just, you know, slowly back up, you know? I'm glad. It's like a filter. Fuck those people. So, you know, I am so grateful. There's amazing people here. And you hear people that say they're humble, and you hear the incredible things they do all the time. But, yeah. Crazy shit. But there are such crazy people, you know, 13 stepping, all that. That goes on. I loved it when I first came in. It was terrific. I thought, whoa. But now I know it's not right, bro. So, yeah. So I just want to end with this. And yeah, I'll end with this. All right. It says here on page 164, 64 was my number when I played football. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more and more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation, what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. It's these teeth, these new teeth. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and to countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. As you understand God, not some shit you're blown into your head. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you will find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. And you know, you guys, to become an old timer, you just don't drink and don't die. So that's pretty easy instructions too. So that's all I know. I love you all, and thank you for letting me be here. It's an honor.
And let's thank Jerry for sharing with us that the answers are in the book.